This webcast is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Jacobs Music Company is the proud sponsor of Between the Keys with Jed Distler. Information on any of the products or services that Jacobs Music offers is available on their website, www.jacobsmusic.com. This is Jed Distler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and I welcome you this week to Between the Keys. And my guest is the great pianist and a dear friend and collaborator, Nadia Shpatchenko. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Welcome
great to be here.
Thank you. Welcome to New York. And I know you've been very busy on tour, but I'm so happy that you've come up here to the studio because we are in the midst of Chopin Mazurka madness. One thing that's always intrigued me about the Chopin Mazurkas is that they seem to really lend themselves to a very wide range of interpretation. So one seems to have a lot of leeway.
Well, definitely. There's such wealth and range of possibilities of interpreting these wonderful works. The pianist who can keep them alive by just finding something fresh while being true to the style are the ones that are the most memorable and the ones that I enjoy the most. Somebody who really is able to interpret the rubato and the spirit of these mazurkas and the intricacy and the nuance, also with a lot of character and emotion. Those are the ones that really stay, I think, in our hearts and in our minds.
Well, for those of you who know the show, I tend to obsess over comparing performances of the same work with different performers. And I thought it might be interesting if we listen to some mazurkas and listen to the same pieces with different performers. I thought we would start with the Opus 24, number 2, Mazurka in C major, which has a wonderful modal middle section. It's one that I like a lot. I'm going to start by playing a recording of a pianist who was in his mid-90s, I believe, maybe even late 90s, when he recorded this, Mieczysław Horszowski. I think Horszowski has a very beautiful sound and he's very sensitive, but to my ears, it doesn't really seem very mazurka-like. I don't know how you thought, Nadia.
I really liked that it was very clear. You know, his voicing was very nice.
That's true.
And very clear. And It doesn't have a lot of rubato, for sure.
Not at all.
Right.
Very
and so,
little.
Like, if you were to dance it, it wouldn't be quite...
It wouldn't quite mazurk.
Right. But I like the contrast and some of the accents and the colors, the different voices that he brought out.
I do, too. It takes a while for me to kind of tune into it. I think that when you're listening at the beginning, at least when I listened at the beginning, I'm thinking, what's going on? This is kind of plain, but you have to meet him halfway. But this next performance, I think, has a lot more of the mazurka qualities that I look for, and this is with Emmanuel Axe.
This is wonderful. Actually, it made me want to dance to learn the mazurka. It was so engaging. And the rubato that Emmanuel Axe captures here is really wonderful. It really has kind of the timing that really works for me. You know, it's flexible and at the same time it's rhythmic. And I thought the middle section was very orchestral, actually.
I agree with you. I think it's true that orchestral sound where the tone just opens up for those big chords.
Definitely. He has very imaginative touch.
The rhythmic snap is so engaging. How da-da-da-ba, like there's that ever so slight rushing of that beat.
Exactly, right. So he's not keeping it metronomical at all and it breezes.
Let's go to another mazurka. This is the A minor, opus 59, number 1. And we're going to first hear it played by the French pianist Samson François.
Thank you.
That was Samson Francois playing the A minor mazurka, opus 59, number 1 of Chopin. He seems to start very straightforwardly, almost offhandedly, like he's throwing the mazurka away. But then as the music unfolds, the contrapuntal contouring gets more and more interesting and complex. And I was really getting a sense that he was moving the phrases over the bar line, and that all the complexity was unfolding in such an interesting perspective. And I really was warming more and more to the performance as it was going on.
Yes, I was actually going to comment on the contrapuntal complexity of it as well. I thought
but I
that
got there first.
I guess so. It was very fascinating, you know, how he brought out the different voices, which such great clarity, and the way that he separated the colors was very fascinating. So I could really hear the contrapuntal writing there, and I thought that he brought out the harmonies and the chromaticism really well.
Yes, in a way, he's bringing out, Samson Francois is bringing out the Bachian influence
exactly,
of
right.
Chopin, because, you know, we know that Chopin was profoundly influenced by Bach. Let's listen to another performance of that same mazurka, opus 59, number 1, and this is with Martha Argerich.
Thank you. So it's so interesting how with the previous performance you said something about him throwing it away, and so kind of the mazurka leaviness.
Yes.
And I thought that it was interesting how at the beginning of this mazurka, I felt like Martha Argerich was bringing it into us. So the way that she started, it was kind of like far away first, and the tempo was uncertain. So the way that she used the rubato, it was like far away and it was coming to us. And then we were kind of taking it in. And I felt like when I was listening, it was almost like looking at gems, at sort of artistic fragments of, I don't know, any kind of art piece that's here and then there and then that there. She was taking each phrase and making something really interesting out of that little phrase and nuancing it. And then it's like you're there having this journey where you're discovering these different things. And she just brought all this music to us. But it had so many different fragments that were all really interestingly shaped.
Which I agree with. I think it's a wonderful perception. The question is, do all these fragments add up to a whole?
I felt like they did, actually.
I think she is able to make it really work very well. I think another pianist who tried to imitate that would have a lot of trouble because it's something you can't really replicate because it's very emotional. Whereas I think with Samson Francois, it's very, very line-oriented, and that perhaps is easier to follow on a way. I mean, these performances are as different as night and day, although I would say night and day in the same city, perhaps.
Right, but she took me on this journey where I was just imagining so many different things, you know, different things. It's like I was in a museum and I was discovering these different artworks at the same time, but I was still in that one environment, so they kind of all fit together.
I think so, and I think her sense of color also is just fantastic. We are comparing recordings of Chopin mazurkas this hour on Between the Keys. Myself, Jed Disler, and I'm here with Nadia Shpachenko. We're going to hear a pianist who would have turned 100 this past January, Nina Milkina. She was born in Russia, and she eventually settled in London, and she made a specialty, actually, of Mozart's music, but she recorded all of the Chopin mazurkas in the early 1970s, and these recordings are not very easy to find now. So let's hear Nina Milkina play the C-sharp minor mazurka, opus 6, number 2 of Chopin. Thank you. very fine playing, Nina Milkina, in the Chopin C sharp minor, Opus 6, number 2, Mazurka. It gets most interesting for me in the middle section where she highlights this bass line to almost startling effect. On the other hand, it seems that it's very clear, very discreet pedaling, perhaps a little matter of fact for my taste. I don't know. Maybe you have a different take on this, Nadia.
It had an interesting, warm, kind of old sound to it. The recordings nowadays sound a little different, so it just almost had like this antique sound to it, timbre. But it was one timbre. It didn't have a huge amount of different timbres and different instruments in the sound.
Yeah, it could be the instrument, it could be the recording quality. I think recording quality often does inform how we hear something, how we perceive an interpretation. Why don't we listen to the same mazurka in a performance by the great American pianist William Capel? I think it will be interesting to compare. Very different kind of piano playing with William Capel.
For sure. I like his fullness, just the dynamic range and the contrast in his sound and his color. Just very orchestral and
yes,
full with variety of touch and great range.
Yeah, certainly the dynamic range, I think, is much more than what we heard in the Nina Milkina recording. Her playing is much more contained.
It's a kind of larger scale.
As we were listening, you commented on the different characterizations of the themes, which I think you really hit the nail on the head there. Nina Milkina and William Capel, strange bedfellows. Anyway, the next mazurka we are going to hear of Chopin is the one in F minor, Opus 7, number 3. And the first performance we will hear is with a former Between the Keys guest. This is Vasily Primakov.
Thank you.
I thought he had the depths of sound that I really love about the Russian school and digging into the keys and just having this great variety of colors. And I loved the energy that he had in his playing, you know, the rubato, and then the underlying energy and the rhythm. You know, it was, the music was always alive. He was always, it was kind of exciting. He was sort of taking us on this thrilling ride. And then sometimes he would stop and linger a little bit. And I thought that was done very effectively as well.
Yes, I didn't expect that. And it's not something I necessarily would do myself. And certainly Vladimir Horowitz didn't do it. I should say, we were listening to Vasily Primakov playing the F minor Mazurka Opus 7, number 3. I let me add that the way he digs deep into the keys also informs the soft playing, because the softer playing has real body and definition as well.
Definitely.
I thought we could compare that with a pianist who was not known really for playing Chopin. He made a few Chopin LPs later in his career, but he was a German pianist mainly known for the German repertoire, Wilhelm Kempf. And this comes from a 1945 German radio broadcast, the Chopin F minor Mazurka. That is a little gem of a performance. Wilhelm Kempf in 1945 on German radio playing the Chopin F minor Mazurka Opus 7 number 3. What I found so interesting is that whereas the Vasily Primakov performance was very grand and epic scaled, this one was on a much smaller scale, yet with so much nuance, and the way that Kempf holds your attention at such soft dynamic levels, the little diminuendos within the soft levels. It's really remarkable piano playing. What did you think?
I agree. You would expect listening to him play Beethoven, for example, and just the way that he captures the style of Chopin and the nuance is just so intricate. He just pulls you in, and like you get mesmerized basically listening to this.
Yes, it makes
just breathless.
Yes, it makes you wonder how he would have played other Chopin mazurkas, and I don't think they exist. Maybe he played them at home. I don't know. There is an amazing recording of the Chopin Berceuse, and I think it's from the same German radio sessions, and it also has that same kind of jewel-like control of tone and timbre and touch. The next mazurka in the Opus 7 set is an A flat major, number 4, and I have three performances that I thought that we could explore, but first let me remind you that you are listening to Between the Keys here on the Classical Network. My name is Jed Disler, and I am here with my dear friend and colleague, the great pianist Nadia Shpatchenko, and we are exploring Chopin mazurkas. Let's listen first to, and you're going to have to pronounce this for me because I'm not very good with names. Yevgeny Korolev.
Yevgeny Korolev, I think.
You see, I'm so glad you're here because this is your native tongue, and I'm so terrible.
Please. Korol is a king.
So oh, that I see. I did not know that because I've played his recordings on this program from time to time, and I always mangle pronouncing his name. It's amazing. I haven't been fired yet. But please say that again. This pianist is
Yevgeny Korolev
playing Chopin. Let's listen. Chopin's Opus 7, Number 4, Mazurka in A flat major. Nadia, please pronounce this wonderful
Yevgeny Korolev.
Yes.
Very large scale performance again.
And very individual ideas.
Definitely.
And this next performance contrasts quite a bit. This is with the British pianist Ronald Smith. You see, I can pronounce his name. Let's listen. Again, what a difference. Ronald Smith playing the A-flat Chopin Mazurka, Opus 7, Number 4. He brings out all of the cross-rhythmic effects, but in a way, he does it in a way that's so vehement that it almost sounds like
Prokofiev-like, right?
Yes! It's less like a Chopin Mazurka and more like a Prokofiev Vasion Fugitive, I think, whereas the performance before was much grander and more nuanced. But
it's very wild.
It's indeed. Kind of wild. It's over before it begins in a way. But here's a performance that I think may split the difference. This is Ewa Poblaka. She's a Polish pianist, and she recorded this on an instrument of Chopin's time. Let's listen to her. Thank you. I really love that performance. That's Eva Pobloka, or Pobloka. How do you pronounce?
I'm not sure. It's Polish. Pobloska
is probably more plausible. She is performing on a piano of Chopin's time, and I feel like that performance sort of splits the difference between the first two. It has rhythmic energy, yet there's a beautiful rubato and sense of timing and proportion. What did you think of that?
Yes, it was very exciting. You know, it also had this, as I said, wild in the previous one, where in a different way. It's like you're a kid and you're spinning around and you're discovering things around you. And so it has this drive that just really pulls you in. And then at the same time, she has these colors that she's able to bring together and kind of express that very successfully.
And by the way, she just made the most extraordinary recording I've ever heard on the piano of Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier Book 1. And in fact, I reviewed it for Gramophone. I gave it a rave review. It's some of the best Bach piano playing you will ever hear in your life. I mean, it's really genius. I'm going to play these two performances back to back, Nadia, because I thought it would be interesting to hear them one after another. The first is with Arturo Benedetti Michelangeli, and the second is with Dinora Varsi.
Thank you.
At the risk of sounding redundant, I'll have to say, again, very different performances. There was the Chopin G minor, Opus 67, number 2, Mazurka. And the first performance was with Arturo Benedetti Michelangeli. The second was with the late Uruguayan pianist Dinora Varsi. I thought the Michelangeli was very beautiful, and it seemed very straightforward, although it's interesting how his sense of rubato is very much in keeping with the description of rubato as keeping the left hand strict and then the right hand sort of freely singing around it. The Dinora Varsi performance is much more animated, and I guess it really mazurks more, for lack of a better word.
It's actually interesting. They both use rubato in different ways, as you mentioned. They're both stylistically authentic.
Although I think somehow the Dinora Varsi performance misses some of the melancholy of the piece.
There's there's
an underlying wistfulness and sadness that I think Michelangeli brings out, except when he bangs out those chords with the subtlety of an anvil falling on your head. Next, we are going to hear the B major Mazurka, Opus 63, number 1. And this is with the Russian pianist Yakov Flier.
It's so interesting the way that he has these very long lines, like a violinist having a solo, and it just, the way that it flows is very fascinating. It goes, he doesn't stop, the motion just keeps going, and I just imagine the single violinist singing out this beautiful melody.
That was Yakov Flier playing the Mazurka in B major, Opus 63, number 1 of Chopin. But let's hear it, the same Mazurka, with a pupil of Liszt, who also was a pupil of Karl Mikuli, who was a pupil of Chopin. This is Moritz Rosenthal.
Thank you.
very, very different performance. I think that Rosenthal really orchestrates it, where the tone colors and the nuances keep you guessing.
Right. It's very surprising and unexpected. And even just the way it ends, it just puts a smile on your face. I liked how he brings out the different harmonies when he has the same material in different keys, and each key just has its own timbre. And it sounds like it. Sometimes it's close to you, sometimes it goes far away. It's an interesting spatial perception that I had during this performance.
And that was something that's very similar to the Martha Argerich performance that we heard much earlier, how using color to give a sense of the spatial element.
Definitely.
That you're talking about. Whereas in the Yakov Flier performance, you don't hear that so much, but you also have a stronger sense of the long line in the middle. And there's something to be said for that approach too. We have one more mazurka, Nadia. We've been listening to so many mazurkas, comparing them here on Between the Keys. This is the Mazurka Opus 7, number 1 in B flat. This is such a fun piece. I really love it. It's very exuberant. And we have two different pupils of Theodor Leschetizky, who is the influential 19th century piano pedagogue. And the first performance will be with Alexander Brilovsky. The second will be with Ignaz Friedman. And these are both contemporaneous recordings. And I think to compare and contrast them will be fascinating. Let's listen. Artie Johnson's character used to say on the television show Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. Very interesting. I don't think anybody's going to get that reference. I'm giving away my age. But first we heard Alexander Brilovsky, and then we heard Ignaz Friedman playing the B-flat mazurka of Chopin, Opus 7, number 1. You know, what was interesting about Brilovsky was the right hand was really dominating, and those trills, you really responded to them.
Yes, I saw the trills, but very crispy, and the lengths were different. I like the way he varied the lengths of the trills and made them kind of unexpected.
Exactly. He would always keep you guessing with that. I thought the Ignaz Friedman performance had more rhythmic thrust to it. It seemed that not just more left hand involvement, but it seemed that he was making his points not so much through inflection, but more through timing.
I thought the two hands worked together and propelled the music. It was very unified, the way that he used the texture.
Whereas I think the Brilovsky performance is much more episodic and sectionalized. It was still very interesting and it held my attention, but this just goes to show you that there are so many ways to interpret the Chopin mazurkas, as we've been learning this past hour. I think the variety of styles are kind of mind-boggling. I never expected it would be to that degree. Anyway, Nadia, I am so happy that you were able to be here to co-host with me for Between the Keys. This is Jed Distler and Nadia Shpachenko.
It was so great to stop by and to discover all these performances, some of which I never heard before, and the styles were just so different. It was a really great experience.
I think we can all take something away from this. In any event, I hope you will be able to join me next week at this time for Between the Keys, which is an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Happy mazurking.